Thank you very much. So I'm going to focus today on walnut tree crops. So the U.S. produces about 54% of the walnuts in the world, and California produces about 99% of the U.S. English walnut production, so this is a major crop for California. However, annual losses in the U.S. can approach about 18%, and in nursery conditions, most of those losses are attributed to some soil-borne pathogens, specifically Agrobacterium tumefaciens, which causes crown gall, Phytophthora, which causes crown and root rot, Armillaria, which causes a number of root diseases, and lesion nematodes. About 70% of California trees are grown on the hybrid rootstock paradox. Paradox has increased vigor and greater resistance to some Phytophthora species, but it is more susceptible to atumefaciens, armillaria, and nematodes. And right now, most of, if not all of this paradox is grown from seed, from hybrid seeds in nurseries for the rootstock. Nurseries right now are still using chemical fumigation as the primary method to control these diseases. So pre-plant, they fumigate. And walnut nurseries in California mostly still have critical use exemptions for methyl bromide, but as you're aware, that's going to end probably sooner rather than later. And then the major alternative to methyl bromide, Telone C35, is also under increased regulation in California. So we wanted to look at a chemical fumigant alternative for controlling these diseases in nursery conditions, given this increased regulation and difficulty with chemical fumigation. So we decided to look at a technique called anaerobic soil disinfestation. This is a method that was developed independently in Japan and the Netherlands about 15 years ago. It, again, is a pre-plant method. Basically, you add carbon source to the soil and incorporate it, add water, and then cover the soil with a plastic tarp. And so the idea is that the soil microbes are going to eat the carbon and use up the oxygen, and anaerobic conditions are generated. So far, it seems to be non-host specific, and in a variety of studies, it's been found to reduce a wide range of plant pathogens, from verticillium to rhizoctonia. Should also mention that it's being used this year on about 800 acres of commercial strawberry production in California. However, it has never been looked at for tree crops, or it's just now starting to be looked at tree crops, and certainly not for walnut conditions. So we set up two field trials, or repeated a field trial, at the UC Kearney Ag Center in Parlier, California. This is smack in the heart of the Central Valley of California. We did a number of treatments. We performed ASD using rice bran as our carbon source. Rice bran has been used, again, by the strawberry industry and strawberry researchers as an effective carbon source. We figured that was a good starting place for our sort of proof of concept trials. We also fumigated with Telone C35, and we obviously had a no treatment control. To assess pathogen abundance, we buried small mesh inoculum bags that were inoculated either with atumefaciens or some Pythium ultimum strains. And then we measured pathogen abundance during these treatments and immediately after, and obviously monitored soil temperature, moisture, and anaerobic conditions. So the first year of this trial, we applied rice bran. It was sort of the standard rate among, again, strawberry research, at 20.2 tons per hectare. The second year, we applied that rate as well, but we also wanted to see if we could generate these conditions at a lower rate of rice bran, and so we applied it at 15.7 tons per hectare, too. So we were able to generate anaerobic conditions at both of these rice bran rates. Here we have on the x-axis our time in weeks, and on the y, a measure of oxidative reduction potential, or EH, and this is, again, a measure of anaerobic conditions. Basically, any value that's below 200 millivolts is considered anaerobic. So you can see here in red, we have our 20.2 tons per hectare rate, solidly anaerobic. Same with our 15.7 tons per hectare rate, also solidly anaerobic. And our no treatment control remained aerobic. Just as a comparison, again, since we're been collaborating and discussing our techniques with the strawberry industry, cumulative EH hours is a method for looking at the overall total number of anaerobic hours in your treatment. And so for comparison, ours were over 400,000 for our treatments. The strawberry folks on the coast of California barely crack 100,000. So we were really getting great anaerobic conditions in our soils. And some of this is likely attributed to the differences in environment. If you're familiar with the soils of coastal California, especially near Watsonville where the strawberries are grown, it's a very clay soil, and it's obviously much cooler there than in the Central Valley where we have a very sandy soil, and on the days that we were applying the rice bran, it was over 100 degrees. So definitely some differences there, and it seems to be potentially correlated with our solidly anaerobic conditions. We were able to get pathogen control with both of these rice bran rates. The top panel is the abundance of H. hemophaceans. The bottom panel is the abundance of Pythium. As you can see here, with the 20.2 tons per hectare and 15.7 tons per hectare rates, H. hemophaceans populations were at or below detection level after ASD, and obviously significantly lower than our no treatment control. Similarly with Pythium, again, we still had some Pythium, but they were significantly lower than our no treatment control. So in these two trials, we also looked at a variety of soil depths. The first year, we looked at 7.6 centimeters and 15.2 centimeters. And the second year, we looked at 15.2, 47.7, and 76.2 centimeters. These are slightly funny numbers because, as you're probably aware, growers like to use stuff in feet and inches. So I converted for you guys. At all of the shallower depths, H. hemophaceans abundance was below detection after ASD. At the 47.7, as I showed in the previous slide, we did still see some H. hemophaceans, but again, significantly lower than the no treatment control. We were interested in looking at this 76 centimeter depth as a proxy for and potential for nematode control. In California, especially in the nursery conditions, there is a zero tolerance for nematodes. And especially in these sandy soils, nematodes are known to bury down below 76 centimeters. And so we wanted to look and see, can we even generate anaerobic conditions at that depth? We're certainly not concerned that there are major populations of H. hemophaceans that deep waiting to infect walnut roots. But again, it was as a way of generating an idea or looking at an idea of whether we could get pathogen control that deep. And so we did see a significant reduction in H. hemophaceans at that depth. We had a similar pattern with telone C35, not surprisingly, but again, consistent with our ASD results. So again, H. hemophaceans was below detection at all depths except for the 76.2 depth. And so even fumigation at that depth cannot completely reduce H. hemophaceans populations. And it's a little tricky to see based on the way I've got these graphs set up, but actually the population in the fumigated soils of H. hemophaceans at 76 centimeters was slightly higher than the population in our ASD treated soils at that depth. So ASD is performing just as well as chemical fumigation at these soil depths. We saw similar patterns with Pythium, again, below detection at 8 and 15 centimeters. There was still some Pythium at 46 and 76 centimeters, but at least at 46, they were still significantly lower than our known treatment control. And at 76, we had quite a bit of variation. So there's still a lot of discussion about the exact mechanisms of how ASD works. Certainly the generation of anaerobic conditions is affecting things, but there's likely a combination of things. The generation of anaerobic conditions, there's been some measurements of volatile organic compounds that are produced either biotically or abiotically, and then obviously changes in the microbial community composition. And so indeed, if you do this is 16S next-gen sequencing data. We see a distinct difference in the communities between our pre-ASD and no treatment control soils and our post-ASD soils. And about 80% of this separation between the no treatment control and our ASD soils is due to some significant differences in a couple of key components. If you don't treat the soil with ASD, there generally seems to be a greater increase or higher numbers of chloroflexi and actinobacteria. In soils that are treated with ASD, there seems to be increases in Bacillus, Clostridium, in general the Firmicutes, and more specifically in some of the Burkholderia species. So I'm still working on analyzing all of this data, but again, this is at the 15 centimeter depth, just comparing ASD soils and no treatment controls. And again, you can see a wide variety of differences in the bacterial community composition. Those that are in blue here on this side of the graph are increased in abundance in the ASD treated soils. The orange have increased abundance in the no treatment control soils. What's also interesting is that this change in the bacterial community composition seems to persist over time. So this is an inclusion of both trials on the same graph. And you can see there is some difference between trial one and trial two. There is distinctly a separation here. These trials were performed basically right next to each other, so there is just some heterogeneity in our field. But despite that, there is still a distinct separation between no treatment and ASD soils. And again, what's interesting is this happens over time. And so here in green, we have our pre-ASD soils, and then we have our post-ASD or at 6 weeks. And so again, we have our no treatment control that separates out nicely and is similar to our pre-ASD soils, and we have our ASD-treated soils. But four months after ASD, that community in those ASD-treated soils remains very similar to the community that was found immediately after ASD, and have reason to suspect that this continues. I'm still processing samples from about 8 months afterwards. The other interesting thing is that we see some of these same trends at the deeper depths. So the graph before was just at the 15 centimeter depth. But when we look at deeper depths, again, we see some similar patterns. So there's a lot on here, but I'll take you through it. Here we have ASD on the bottom and no ASD at the top. And again, at 15 centimeters, we have a clear separation between ASD and no ASD. But then once we get deeper, things get a little bit more complicated. This is at 47 centimeters, and at 76 centimeters, there's still a lot of overlap between the 76 and the 47 centimeter samples. And so what we think is going on here is that the carbon source is being rototilled in to about the top 15 centimeters of the soil. And so that's where we're going to see the greatest separation of the community. Once we get deeper, obviously we do still see anaerobic conditions, we do see pathogen control, but it's not happening in the same way with the community changing at those lower depths. They're more similar than they are right where the carbon source is being incorporated. The other interesting thing I just wanted to mention is we saw a dramatic reduction in weeds. The plot with the ASD at 12 weeks still had almost no weeds. Control is a nice grassy lawn. And again, there was also a difference in the weed types. So those that were treated with ASD were predominantly broadleaf weeds, if there were any weeds at all, and the no treatment control was predominantly grass. So just to quickly summarize, ASD does appear to be an effective chemical fumigant alternative, at least for atumefaciens and pythium in these walnut nursery conditions. And there seems to be a dramatic change in the soil microbial community and potentially the possibility of pathogen control, I forgot, 30 inches down to 76 centimeters, which would mean possible nematode control. So, thank you very much.